Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has planted an early stake in the Democratic presidential primary with a plan to make all public colleges tuition and fee free and to cancel $640 billion of student debt. That goes even beyond the college affordability plan that Senator Bernie Sanders campaigned on in 2016. Yesterday, we discussed how Warren's proposal would work. You can catch up or revisit that conversation at radioboston.org. Today, we want to consider the next question. Is it a good idea? Here in studio to help answer is Zach Bears. He's executive director of PHENOM, the Public Higher Education Network of Massachusetts. Zach, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you as well. Do you think public college should be free for all students? Would student loan debt relief jumpstart the economy? Or would it be unfair to those who've worked hard to pay back their student loans? You can give us a ring at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or send us a tweet at Radio Boston. All right. So, gentlemen, there's basically two main planks to this proposal: the free tuition at all 2- and 4-year public colleges and the debt relief for existing student loans. So let's take them one at a time. Let's start with free tuition. Zach, should public 2- and 4-year colleges be free for all students?
Absolutely. In fact, in Massachusetts and across the country, we used to have a near-free system. We've seen tax cuts mainly benefiting the wealthy and the concurrent budget cuts that come with that have driven up tuition and fees to such a high level. Here in Massachusetts, we have the fastest-growing public college costs in the country, the second-fastest-growing student debt burden for public college grads within the country. And we're seeing that about 3/4 of all jobs in the state are going to require some form of 2- or 4-year certification. We know that universal access to public higher education is incredibly important for our economy, and it's what the people of Massachusetts deserve.
Well, you're getting at part of the senator's argument here. So Warren is basically saying that a college degree now is, you know, sort of what a high school education was before. It's essential for so many careers and that all students should have access to it. And we spoke with Jeremy Thompson just yesterday on the program. He's a senior policy analyst at the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. And he basically said it should be an extension of the K-12 system.
So in Massachusetts, almost 200 years ago, Horace Mann, then the Secretary of the Board of Education, decided we need elementary and high school education to be free, public, universal, controlled by the public, and accessible to the public. We've sort of moved the ball down the field as far as higher education goes being universal, but we're not there yet. And that's really her goal.
So what about that, Jim Sturgis? Does that argument ring true for you that, the old high school diploma is basically the college degree now and therefore it should be covered by the state?
I agree that to some degree it's become much more important. I guess I'd say the first thing I'd say is probably that while our higher education system has its problems, I'd be fearful of the government takeover, in essence, of higher education, what it would actually do to the quality of our higher education system. Take a look at our K-12 system. Notwithstanding tons of work to improve it, we're about 27th in the world. I would say that our higher education system, given the fact that it attracts high-level students from around the world, is the envy of the world, is an incredible engine for economic growth. Now, second thing is I'd say there are two things that we should separate this into two conversations. One's a conversation about community college, and one's about 4-year degree-granting institutions and advanced degree-bearing institutions. The community college issue is really not that difficult in the sense that we have Pell Grants that could cover most of the cost of a community college. We probably could do a little bit better on that front. And I think that whether you're Republican or Democrat, or I think even Governor Weld, who's making a run on the Republican side, I think he's expressing some interest in getting to some place where you can make community college free. I think the problem that lies in that is this. Take Bunker Hill Community College. I mean, no disrespect to Bunker Hill. It's a very well-run institution. But their graduation rate is between 11% and 13%. So making it free for what end? To what end? Now, some of that might be because some students are leaving because they actually have to work and make some money, then they have to come back. And I understand also that some of the folks who go to Bunker Hill are not seeking an associate's degree. So it's not exactly fair to say that. But I would say this.
Sure.
There are some institutions. There's one that's been set up in downtown Boston Financial District. It serves Boston Public School graduates. It's called Duet. It's a partnership with Southern New Hampshire University. They are able to provide an associate's degree within 2 years, maximum $11,000. If you really work your heart out, you could actually get it within a single year for about $5,500. They are aiming for a 70% 80% completion rate. So I'd say that it really depends. What are you trying to get out of this? The four-year degree granting question is much more complex than that, but I think I'd start there with the community college question. It's not just about paying for stuff. It's actually what's the benefit to the student.
We're talking about Senator Elizabeth Warren's college affordability plan with Zach Bears. He's the executive director of the Public Higher Education Network of Massachusetts and Pioneer Institute executive director Jim Sturgis. And you can give us a ring at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Paul is calling from Bridgewater. Paul, what do you think about the senator's plan?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm a graduate of the old state college system here in Massachusetts back in the 60s. And my education was $200 a semester. And if it wasn't up to Ronald Reagan in the 80s, when he decided he would charge people for their higher education, we wouldn't have the situation we're in, because we'd identify the fact that we have a situation that we can pay for.
Paul, thanks for the ring. So, Zach, he's sort of echoing the personal story that we hear from Senator Elizabeth Warren as well, right? I think that she's got a campaign video out talking about a similarly low tuition rate that she paid back in the day to go to the University of Houston, I believe it was. And she's saying, look, you know, those days are gone and we need to find some way to replicate that. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think Paul brings up both his personal stories very accurate, and he also brings up the point of paying for it. When he went to college, we did pay for it. It was part of the greatest investment in our public good that we've ever made as a country, and it meant we had the best economy that we've ever had in our country's history. And for Senator Warren, you know, I think the core thing here is that no matter what government is, it's about redistributing value to someone. Right now, we have a government that's redistributing value from lower-income people to higher-income people. We saw this with the tax giveaway, which is about from Donald Trump, which is about $150 billion a year. Senator Warren's plan, which is a 2% wealth tax on the top 75,000 families, would raise $275 billion a year, and that would fund both of these proposals, universal child care, and give us some money to address either other issues or deficits. So I think we see here that we're talking about not saying that poor people can't get access to higher education because rich people deserve tax cuts. We're saying that all people deserve universal access to public higher education because we have more than enough money to pay for it. And I think that's what we used to do. We stopped doing that, and we've seen what's happened. We have economic strife, people who are very downtrodden, people who are very afraid that their children will not have a better future than they will. And this is a way that we can make sure that they will.
But Jim Sturgis, I think some folks are wondering, is this the best way to spend that money? So as Zach said, Warren is proposing a 2% tax on people with, you know, $50 million plus assets, and you can raise a lot of money that way. She's saying let's forgive $640 billion of student debt. She's also proposing $100 billion in new Pell Grant money. You mentioned those Pell Grants earlier, and those are a little bit more free. You can use that on, you know, non-tuition and fee expenses as well, which, as we know, can make up a lot of the cost. I'll just use UMass Amherst as an example. It's our flagship state university. If you're enrolling this fall, your total cost of attendance will be about $30,000, and 46% of that, almost half, is going to be your room and board. So Jim, I don't know, would the money be better spent on Pell Grants instead?
It's far better spent on Pell Grants and much more flexible. I agree with that. I guess the only issue I have here is, just as I think it's fair to say that those folks who say for every economic ill, the cure is a tax cut, I think the cure for every ill in terms of lack of opportunity, saying it's more money, is as brain dead as the former. What I mean by that is, look, the historical record is very, very clear. With increased federal support for higher education over the past 50 years, we've seen a high inflation rate that goes well beyond any other product in the marketplace. So if you're putting more money but it ends up costing much more, that's a problem. Now, why does that happen? It happens because the federal government, in giving money, has to do its duty, and it has to actually think about what are the accountability measures that we need to make sure we're getting best bang for the buck. We're getting a fair sports, access to sports, fair this, fair that. That's all. I make no judgment on any of that. But with that comes all kinds of regulations and burdens on the universities where they actually have to hire up on the administrative level. And if you take a look at any institution, private or public, we've seen this monumental increase in administrators. And you've seen much less emphasis on full-time faculty. You see a rush to adjunct faculty. look, UMass, because it's a public institution, provides this data to the public. Private institutions don't do that. But if you take a look at UMass just this morning, just to for fun before coming on, I said I'll look at some data that I have in a computer already. It was 2010 to 2015 data. With a huge increase in enrollment because after the recession, lots of people wanted to make a beeline for UMass because it was more affordable. Notwithstanding the fact there's huge enrollment increase, there is actual decline in full professors at UMass. At the same time, the administrative hires went right through the roof. So the question is, what do you do with the money? And if the federal government's actually going to provide that and require accountability, which it must because it's a public entity, what's the outcome of that? And I think I have some really big doubts as to whether all this money actually leads to a hell of a lot more, excuse me, heck of a lot more access for kids who need it.
Let's try to get in a couple more calls. Mike is in Framingham. Hey there, Mike, what do you think about the senator's plan?
I think it's a great idea. In fact, I'd go a step further. I would make companies and wealthy who are hiding money offshore, like, for instance, the Panama Papers, are the fact that ExxonMobil doesn't pay any taxes at all, but yet their profits are the highest in history. All these things could be fixed to help pay for such a thing. The facts are an educated public makes for a better society. And when you have an education, you're much more likely to pay taxes into the community than take it out as, you know, not as getting refunds. I mean, half the country doesn't pay taxes, and it's not they're at fault. It's just they're not making an income that can pay the taxes, and therefore you take that and you add it to people who aren't paying taxes, like Trump and people like that, are all these companies that are taking their money offshore. You've got two ends eating away at one thing, and there's just not enough to go around. So, yeah, most countries that have free education, they're far better than us on the learning curve as far as ahead education, reading levels, and so on and so on. It's a, with no pun intended, it's a no-brainer.
Mike, thanks for the ring. Just a quick fact check here. The president's leaked tax returns, which we have seen limited views of, it shows he does pay some taxes, although we don't have a clearer picture because he hasn't released all those. Let's hear from...
Not enough.
Not enough. Let's hear from David in Billerica. David, what do you think?
Hi there. I just wanted to state a couple of facts here. First of all, the first fact, I graduated from a private college in the mid-1980s. I paid a total of $40,000 for my education. My daughter is finishing up her sophomore year right now. By the time she is done, even though she's paying close to $20,000 a year, getting about $12,000 a year in tuition reimbursement from the college, she'll still be $80,000 in debt.
Wow.
As a 20-year-old young woman. Is this the type of future we want for our country?
Well, so David, let me ask you. I'm glad you called because you're getting into the second plank of the senator's plan, which I want to get to, which is this debt forgiveness idea. And as you know, people who would complain about it will say, look, that's not fair. You know, your family knew what you were getting into. You borrowed that money. You should pay it back. I mean, that was the bargain that you made. I mean, do you buy that or is it just impossible for an 18-year-old to make an informed decision on something like that much debt?
Here's the thing. The people that are saying that went to school at a time where you could afford to go to school, take out a few loans, but still pay it back on a reasonable amount of time. How does a 20-year-old start paying back $80,000 when she's starting from ground zero? You can't do that anymore. The good old days of, well, I worked hard for my money, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps, that's a fallacy that's long gone from our country. We don't live that way anymore. We can't pull ourselves up from our bootstraps because there are too many people above us that are keeping us down. And I honestly don't know what my daughter's going to do. I can help as much as I can. But there's no way that within even 10 years after she graduates, that $80,000 is going to have a significant chunk taken out of it.
David, thanks so much for the ring and for sharing your experience. So, Zach Barris, let me come to you, because I think that, you know, we don't know exactly what the circumstances of David's daughter are going to be, what her major is, what her profession is going to be. But we do know that statistically, on average, people who go to four-year colleges and take on this debt do earn a lot more money. I think it's $500,000 over their lifetime over people who have just a college diploma. So one of the critiques of the senator's plan to cancel this outstanding college debt is that it's not as progressive as she claims, that it's sort of this big giveaway to people who actually are going to earn a lot of money over their lifetimes anyway. How do you respond to that?
So two things here. This plan is incredibly progressive. If you look at not the average amounts based on incomes, you know, income 25 income quartiles is what they're called. If you look at the average debt within those incomes, you find that they're actually pretty similar. In the bottom 25%, the average debt is $24,000. In the 25 to 50% range, you have about $31,000. And in the 50 to 75% range, you also have an average of about $31,000. The issue here is that people at lower incomes have been priced out of the system. If you're in the system, you are taking on about as much debt. And that's why this is so important, why these two pieces are so interconnected. What we've had now, and I think you've heard it from a lot of the callers, is we don't have a system of informed consent. The system is so opaque that most students, not just the 18-year-olds, but their families, don't have the information they need to make informed choices. And what that does is it creates a system of coercion where you're being told you need to go and get a higher degree of some kind to get a fair job, but there really is no public option. No matter where you go, you're going to be going into debt. And I think you know, what we need to do to fix that is we need to get rid of the debt that came up under that broken system, and then we need to make sure that we have a free public option so that we never get into this mess again.
Alan is in Worcester. Alan, I understand that you've been following the conversation. What do you think?
Well, I think there's an issue of accountability here. I teach in one of the state community colleges. I think that the most successful students are the ones who have some skin in the game. I'm all in favor of reducing higher education costs dramatically. I'm all in favor of Pell Grants and any other forms of financial aid that will keep that that will keep the cost down. But if they can go completely for free, there are several issues that are wrong with that. Number one, a lot of them will not have any skin in the game. They'll just play along. Number two, in the state of Massachusetts, in the state colleges, the colleges are budgeted by the state for their full-time faculty. Adjunct professors, and where I teach, the adjunct professors represent probably more than 50% of the staff. I am one of them. We bring a lot of outside experience to it. We bring a lot of background and a lot of outside experience.
Got it. Alan, thank you so much for the ring. And Jim Sturgis, I see you sort of nodding along there as Alan is talking. But what about, you know, the counterpoint that, okay, so yes, maybe you'll have some students that if they don't have skin in the game, they won't take it very seriously. But maybe that's a trade worth making to give an opportunity to kids who really do want to take it seriously.
Look, I find Alan's point really interesting, and I guess if I could just for a second, Callum, I'd just like to go back to David's point for
second.
Recall his number.
In
the
1980s. 80,000.
80,000. He also spent 40,000 when he was going to college in the 1980s. This thing called inflation. And $40,000 in the 1980s would be about $80,000 right now. No, I'm not trying to question his family's choice about borrowing all of the money that his daughter had to pay, but I'm just trying to say that we're $80,000 working and doing a bunch of other things is a little easier to do, and I say that simply as someone who's paying more than that for my child to go through college right now. I'd also like to say there are other models out there. Purdue University has this thing where if you graduate from Purdue, for a number of the students, they will actually provide all debt payments through as a percentage of what you make. It incentivizes the college to actually want to help you get placed. It makes them more attentive to you as an alum, and it makes sure that it's affordable over time. But back to your question about, you know, is it a trade-off that's worth making? There is a huge moral hazard issue here. I think, look, what about the students who worked really hard and paid off their debts already? Should they get something? How about the students who decide not to follow their passions and followed some that would get them in some earnings so they could actually pay off their debts, rather than someone who decided to become an artist or an anthropologist? Nothing against anthropologists or artists.
Sure, but we understand that it's a hard profession to make it in.
Right.
Zach, just in the final seconds that we have left, is this plan even realistic, both politically and financially?
Absolutely. I mean, I think our what we think of as realistic is defined by the ideas we present, and we presented this idea really quickly on Skin in the Game. If we do this, academic fees are covered. Students still have housing, food, transportation, skin in the game. And we've seen these statistics. Half of community college students are facing hunger on a regular basis. A large percentage are facing homelessness on a regular basis. Addressing the academic costs will help students stay in school. They can use their other aid to fund their housing, transportation, and food. And they'll have skin in the game.
That's Phenom Executive Director Zach Burns and Pioneer Institute Executive Director Jim Sturgis. Gentlemen, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.